Chapter 1. The United States and Canada invited various nations to a three-day economic summit in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea were not invited. The United States and Canada's political and economic integration was the sole item on the summit's agenda. President Walker and Prime Minister Aubois stepped up to their podiums to give their joint introductory statements. President Walker spoke first. "Canada and the United States have decided to integrate politically and economically," he said. "Both nations will do away with paper and coin currency. They will use the same single electronic currency. People and governments will have 1 year to turn in their American and Canadian dollars for full value. After a year, both nations' paper and coin currency will have no value. A referendum on full political integration is scheduled in both countries for 1 year from the date the electronic currency is implemented." Prime Minister Aubois told the assembled dignitaries, "The impetus for the integration is Iran's attack on California's oil refineries, its attempt to use nuclear material for dirty warheads and car bombs, its declaration of war on the United States, and its recent cyber attack. Through integration, the people of the United States and Canada can better protect themselves from the economic shocks brought on by terrorism, political instability, religious extremism, and other events that occur around the globe. Our nation's long-term goal is to create a union with a self-sustaining, closed economy capable of providing security and real quality of life improvements for its combined population. At the same time, we seek to create a larger union that will include other countries willing to join us. We anticipate the larger union will connect low-cost labor centers in Asia, Mexico, and in Central and South America with technology, production, wealth, and markets throughout the union. You all are invited to join the United States and Canada in forming a larger union. You all will be immediately accepted into that union." President Walker said, "The American and Canadian Union is the natural outgrowth of free trade agreements implemented over the years. Our union's immediate effect will be to give our integrated government greater control over transactions in our integrated economy. A large amount of corruption, money laundering, crime, and economic inefficiencies will be eliminated. Substantial economic efficiencies will be achieved. The American and Canadian Union will confiscate billions or perhaps trillions of dollars in paper currency that is used in the underground economy and for illegal activities, drug money for example. Another immediate effect will be to wipe out counterfeiting. The United States and Canada believe that those who join with us in a larger union will see their economies stabilize and their GDP substantially increase." Japan's Prime Minister said, "We'll have to give up control of our economies and borders." Prime Minister Aubois told Japan's Prime Minister, "You will not give up control of your economies, but there will be one independent central bank that will be responsible for monetary policy, one federal constitution, one set of federal laws, and one electronic currency, and there will be free movement within the union's borders." Australia's Prime Minister asked, "Whose laws and whose courts?" Prime Minister Aubois replied, "For now, it will be American and Canadian federal law and the American constitution and legal system. Our legislatures are combining American and Canadian federal law into one codified set. The full set will go into effect once political integration occurs. Those who join will have representation in Congress. Your current laws and the legal systems will remain as your state laws and legal system, of course, not to the extent that they violate the Constitution or conflict with federal law." Colombia's president told President Walker and Prime Minister Aubois, "Canada and United States want to swallow up Mexico, and Central and South America, and you want our natural resources." Panama's president added, "Your real reason for the electronic currency is to control every transaction throughout the world. You say the reason for the larger union is to stop terrorists and drug dealers, but in reality, the United States wants to stop anyone from executing any transaction that the United States doesn't like.
America wants to starve people to death."
Australia's Prime Minister told Panama and Colombia's presidents, "It's your choice.
No one is forcing you to join."
Venezuela's president said, "My country will join the new union immediately. Venezuela wants the jobs, the technology, the investment, and the trade.
Venezuela's poor people have to compete with every slum around the world. That is an awful lot of poor people."
President Walker told the assembled dignitaries, "With the exception of South Korea and Japan, all of the other Asian nations have signed on. The Asian nations want greater integration into the North American economy. They only see a positive outcome, particularly when considering China. If Latin America doesn't want to join, the jobs and increased living standards will go to Asia. Mexico's president asked, "What do the Europeans say?" The president of the European Council replied, "It's likely the Eurozone will change to an electronic currency, but it's doubtful that the European Union will join the North American bloc or its single currency system.
There just isn't political support for that move."
President Walker and Prime Minister Aubois met in President Walker's suite after the economic summit concluded.
President Walker asked Prime Minister Aubois, "What do you think?"
"Australia and New Zealand will join as soon as their citizens vote on the issue.
The other Asian nations will quickly follow suit. The Philippines, Thailand and Malaysia have already scheduled a vote.
Japan and South Korea are the hard cases. As far as I'm concerned, China will push Japan into our union and if Japan joins, South Korea will follow. Japan sees itself as a regional power and believes that it has a future with China." Prime Minister Aubois laughed.
"Yeah, like that will ever happen. China will absorb Japan and South Korea.
It'll be far easier to woo the British once Australia and New Zealand are integrated. The Europeans won't be happy that we are enticing countries to join which lie within their zone of influence, but if Congress grants Taiwan's application for statehood, I'm sure Ireland, Wales and Scotland will apply.
Then, I believe that England will find herself so isolated that she will eventually apply.
England will want to be a part of the new British Empire."
President Walker said, "Keep working on the Brits. We need their markets and talent. I'll work on the Latin American crowd. We need their labor and raw materials."
Mexico wants to join, but is heavily pressured not to by Colombia and other like-minded countries in Latin America. Mexico's president invited the leaders of all the Latin American countries to the National Palace in Mexico City.
Discussing the American/Canadian Union was the only item on their agenda.
Mexico's president asked the assembled dignitaries, "When the American and Canadian electronic currency takes effect, what do you plan to do?" Panama's president replied, "Panama will join the union because once the electronic currency takes effect, the Panamanian economy will be wiped out." The presidents of Ecuador and El Salvador replied, "Our official currency is the dollar.
We have no choice but to join."
The president of Ecuador continued, "Actually, the Central American countries are considering joining the union as a single state. That way we'll have more power to compete and we'll have a more diverse economy. We'd be well positioned to attract tourism and healthcare."
Panama's president said, "We plan to become a second Florida, only larger. We want the retirees from the north to flow in. That's steady money and jobs.
Think about all the retirement money that will flow into our low-cost region. If we don't grab the healthcare dollars and jobs, they'll go to Thailand and the Philippines.
Besides, we are closer than Thailand and the Philippines, and we are less expensive than Florida." Colombia's president said, "We can side with China. China makes large investments in our region. China also sends tourists."
Mexico's president told Colombia's president, "The United States will be at war with China in the very near future and you want to side with China. Your whole issue is politics and not what's good for your country or our region. Once the United States is through with China, it will sweep through our region and clean out everything and everyone that it considers a threat."
Chile's president said, "I'd rather side with China." "Me too," Bolivia's president said. "You think that our lives will get better by joining the Union? They won't, and once we join, it will be too late. We'll have lost control of our countries." Mexico's president told them, "You are sadly mistaken if you think that China will bring jobs.
You want China's free handouts, but they're not free." Argentina's president said, "The jobs and investment will come.
Maybe not right away, but they will come. Just look at the German unification. It worked. Now look how strong the German economy is."
Brazil's president said, "Maybe the South American countries should join together. As one country, we would be better able to negotiate with the United States." Mexico's president told Brazil's president, "With all the corruption, drug cartels and inept politicians running those countries, it will never happen. Mexico will join the American and Canadian Union.
Mexico will get the factory jobs and investment."
Argentina's president told Brazil's president, "Besides, if Mexico joins the Union, Argentina will also join."
"Then what will you have?" Colombia's president got extremely angry. "Fucking Americans," he said.
Mexico's president told Colombia's president, I don't get it.
Why are you angry? All I hear is, I'm not joining. I haven't heard one good reason for not joining.
I think Venezuela's president set forth real good reasons for joining.
Think about the benefits.
The drug cartels will be wiped out.
It will be easy for tourists to swoop in and spend their money. There will be a market for our goods and service.
There wouldn't be immigration issues because the factories will come to our people. Right now, your countries sell to the US and Canada.
Once the union happens, the United States will close its borders to everything and everyone. Then who will you sell to?
Africa?
They don't have any money.
Europe? Maybe. China?
Not likely once the war starts. Who's left?
Russia? India? Colombia's president replied, the US wants to wipe us out. Mexico's president grinned and told Colombia's president, you mean the drug cartels and all that easy money that you and yours are stuffing in your pockets?
Look at the world map.
Once the American and Canadian Union happens, the United States can simply annex what's left of South America. Do you think for a minute that a country the size of the United States, Canada, Central America, and Mexico, combined, will let some belligerent speck exist in its heartland or along its border? Your countries will simply be absorbed. I don't think the Americans would send troops, but those in power will find themselves out of a job and the new job holders will join the union.
Think about it.
I'm sure the Americans have.
The world is changing. You either join willingly or be wiped out. Argentina's president said, he's right.
There won't be any more handouts. Slowly, you will see Europe absorb Africa through the European Union.
Then there will only be a handful of very, very large countries that control everything on the planet. It's competition.
Once the United States and Canada decided to join, China, Russia and India will feel compelled to grow larger too. How Russia, China and India split up Central Asia and the Middle East remains to be seen. Brazil's president said, maybe Brazil should join the American and Canadian Union.
There is something to the argument regarding who Brazil will sell to.
Panama's president asked the assembled dignitaries, should we adjourn?
We can reconvene if there is more to discuss. Venezuela's president replied, I move to adjourn. We know where we stand. I don't see the point of further discussions. With that, Mexico's president closed the meeting.
General Juan and Minister Cui met with President Pan shortly after President Pan took office.
General Juan told President Pan, congratulations on your election. The day you became president was a proud moment for China.
Indeed, Minister Cui said.
Congratulations. President Pan told the two men, I've always believed that China must pursue her manifest destiny.
She must seize this moment in history in order to take her rightful place on the world stage.
General Juan said, our military is too weak. It doesn't have the capability to project power.
General, you excelled in acquiring China technology required to defeat China's enemies.
Now I want you to work with Minister Cui on developing plans to weaken the United States.
The American and Canadian Union is an existential threat to China.
That union must be defeated, particularly the larger one that they seek with countries in Asia.
I would like a tactical assessment that reflects the critical damage that China can inflict on the American, European, Canadian, and Russian economies, their industrial base, their military and civilian infrastructure, and their command and control facilities. Work with Minister Cui to substantially increase China's human intelligence and surveillance of American, European, Canadian, and Russian activities and communications. Increase China's cyber battalions to 4 million cyber soldiers. The Americans and Europeans will discuss ways to stop China.
I want to know what they are saying.
Minister Cui, I want you to develop a plan to assassinate the President of the United States, the Vice President, and the Speaker of the House along with all of the Supreme Court justices. I want America's entire leadership wiped out.
All the individuals must be hit the same day and prior to the day on which the electronic currency takes effect. Codename the Operation Raging Tiger. I also want you to establish the American Revolutionary Army and fund it. Take a page from the Irish playbook. Form a new political party to give the American Revolutionary Army a political voice.
Name the new political party the Free American Party.
Get it capable of participating in elections in all 50 states.
Populate the American Revolutionary Army with members from various militia groups in the United States.
Let them do the shooting.
Gun control is the perfect political segue for the existing political angst to find a voice in the Free American Party and to populate the American Revolutionary Army. Use our human intelligence network that was set up after the National Electronic Defense Act was passed.
Find out what issues the people have.
Exploit them as a means to fill the ranks of the American Revolutionary Army. You can start with the proposition that a citizen has a constitutional right to destroy a tyrannical government through armed rebellion. Claim that the healthcare system is really the privatization of the United States tax system and was implemented to avoid congressional approval for tax increases, whereby increases in healthcare premiums constitute taxation without representation. Use the public's anger surrounding the government's implementation of an electronic currency, which represents the taking of people's wealth without proper compensation, and the unemployed social justice argument against banks, insurance companies, and Wall Street. Use the people's transfer of wealth argument, which states that while they have depreciation-style living conditions, the wealthy keep getting richer. Argue that the government effectively denies freedom of movement by requiring Americans to prove citizenship when traveling within the United States.
Build on the theme that the American government's electronic surveillance violates the Constitution's Fourth Amendment.
Couple that argument with one that law enforcement swarms people and kills them without justification, and that the police aren't prosecuted for their extrajudicial killings. Point to the police's extrajudicial killing and the electronic surveillance as behavior that justifies destroying a tyrannical government. Those arguments will swell the Free American Party's ranks and build political support for the American Revolutionary Army's activities. Minister Cui said, "This is a large-scale, long-term operation."
Where will I get the funds? President Pan replied, "Take advantage of the United States' move to an electronic currency.
There is a huge volume of paper currency floating around in the underground economy, which the American and Canadian governments plan to seize." Minister Cui asked President Pan, "Do we arm the American Revolutionary Army?" "Yes, but with weapons bought and made in America.
I don't want China exposed in this operation."
"The American government knows there are huge stockpiles of ammunition hidden in the country, but it doesn't know where. Pressure the American Revolutionary Army to access those stockpiles, but just organize for now."
"I don't want to tip off the American government and invite more security measures."
"The American Revolutionary Army will become active after President Walker is assassinated. General Wan, I want your command to develop and deploy a cyber virus that will destroy the United States Eastern Seaboard's electrical grid, and one that will transfer funds to China from banks in Russia, Europe, Canada, and United States."
"The United States has to work with central banks around the globe to implement its plan for an electronic currency. Work with our central bank in devising the banking virus. Send it to their central banks using the worldwide wire transfer system. Have the virus transfer itself from their central banks to their domestic banks using their domestic wire transfer system. Empty their bank accounts.
Move the money to China and destroy the electronic wires transfer trail. Let the virus sit in their central banks until I give the order to activate it."
"I want to teach the Americans not to meddle with China." President Pan grinned and said, "They like to brag about their world-class banking system. They won't be so proud when this is over."
President Pan told General Wan, "Your command did an excellent job in deploying and testing the Ebola virus in Africa. Have suicide infectees spread the virus among the homeless people in the largest American cities, state capitals, and in Washington, D.C. Have healthy operators use various handheld devices to infect military personnel working at the Pentagon, in Congress, and in Middle America. Bring recently infected people in from Latin America, Canada, Europe, Australia, and Asia."
"The American government won't detect them until it's too late."
"The United States will be faced with so much destruction from the Ebola and cyber viruses that the Americans will have to expend enormous sums to contain them.
More importantly, the United States will lose credibility in the world.
The world knows the Americans intend to dominate the world under the guise of security, particularly economic security and stability. I also want you to negotiate China's purchase of Russia's Black Sea Fleet, including the purchase of Russia's newest supersonic sniper missile."
"You will work directly through my office?"
General Wan asked, "Will Minister Tsi take part in the Black Sea Fleet negotiations?"
"No, you are solely responsible for them. Leave when your schedule permits."
"It's imperative that the Black Sea Fleet negotiations conclude as soon as possible. Minister Cui, I want you to meet with Minister Khorasani.
Give him this. President Pan handed Minister Kui a bound document. I intend to expand China's borders to the Caspian Sea. China needs Iran's help to accomplish that goal.
Tell Minister Khorasani that China doesn't care what methods Iran uses to bring about regime change or who Iran installs to lead the people, but be clear that China only wants leaders who favor China.
General Wan asked President Pan, when do we begin? Immediately, President Pan replied. President Pan's secretary said, Mr. President, the members of the Politburo Standing Committee are seated. President Pan stepped into the conference room. He took his seat at the table. Manchu told President Pan, explain your plan. President Pan began with, our people need a great purpose to inspire them. That's why Chairman Mao was a genius. We need to champion the concept of China's manifest destiny.
How?
She asked. We'll extend our borders to the Caspian Sea.
China's annexation of Central Asia will start the process. Terrorist activity will abate in the Xinjiang Uyghur region and across Central Asia.
Minerals and other resources will start arriving on the new Silk Road that China will build.
Soon oil and gas will arrive through pipelines built by China. China will use Iran as a proxy to gain control of the Middle East oil. That oil will arrive by Chinese-flagged tankers. Manchu told President Pan, China will have to commit considerable military and economic resources.
We can't keep the body count and injuries quiet, particularly if there is substantial and sustained unrest.
President Pan told the committee members, our people will accept the cost in blood and treasure if they are part of the process, but they will have to see their lives improve.
She asked President Pan, how do you propose to accomplish such a feat?
President Pan replied, China will annex Russia's Far East Federal District and allow our citizens to secure landholdings like the Americans did with their 1862 Homestead Act and during their gold rush period.
We'll encourage our population to flood onto Russia's eastern land for their individual and financial benefit.
China's military can guarantee their safety.
We should give our companies favorable treatment, so they will take the risk to stay and invest. There will be hostilities.
Tens of thousands will die. But that is the price to transform China into a great nation.
Wei asked General Wan, what's your opinion? General Wan replied, we can handle Central Asia. The problem is Russia.
Her Far East Federal District is a massive area. Russia will fight, but she doesn't have the population or military resources to secure an area of that size. Russia doesn't have the economic resources to win an extended war either. Russia will threaten nuclear strikes, but I don't believe the Americans will allow it.
The Americans won't expend resources or put troops in harm's way to benefit Russia.
The most serious threat will be Russia's use of chemical and biological weapons as a means to compensate for our numerical troop advantage and population surge.
Wing asked Minister Tsi, what's your opinion? What will the Europeans and Americans do?
Minister Tsi replied, I don't believe the Americans or the Europeans will intervene in Central Asia or Russia's Far East Federal District.
They have significant problems of their own. Their economies are in shambles.
They are focused on incorporating Dr. Ranshoff's technology into their economies and rebuilding them as quickly as possible.
The Americans are focused on forming their new union and expanding it.
The European economies will rebound faster and be stronger than Russia's. The Americans and Europeans will enjoy watching China and Russia fight it out, but they won't be happy to see China win.
Manchu told Minister Tsi and General Wan, would you leave us?
After General Wan closed the door, Wei asked President Pan, what's in this for China? President Pan replied, the world is focused on Dr. Ranshoff's technology, but in reality, her technology doesn't change anything.
There are limited resources in the world, and her technology only eliminates the need for fossil fuels.
Besides, fossil fuels are almost depleted worldwide.
The real issue is raw materials.
That's why we need to expand our coastline and landmass. Annexing North Korea, Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia will strengthen our claim to resources in the South China Sea, East China Sea, and Yellow Sea, and their annexation will prevent them from joining the new American Union. Russia will move her troops into Kazakhstan once China annexes Central Asia. But eventually, Russia will move her troops from Kazakhstan to her Far East Federal District. At that point, China will annex Kazakhstan. Then China will be well positioned to confront the American and Canadian Union, and the European Union anywhere in the world.
That's simply inviting a world war, Wei said. The Americans will never allow it. The Americans will make a lot of noise, but they won't engage China.
The Americans and Europeans have too many economic ties to our economy that prevent them from engaging us.
Their economies are too weak to support a sustained conflict.
I asked General Wan to prepare a tactical assessment reflecting the critical damage that China can inflict on the American, Canadian, European, and Russian economies, their industrial base, their military and civilian infrastructure, and their command and control facilities. I also asked him to develop a virus that will destroy the electrical grid on the United States' eastern seaboard and one that will transfer funds to China from banks in Russia, Europe, Canada, and America. General Wan will deploy the Ebola virus throughout the United States just as he did in Africa. I will order the Ebola and cyber attacks if the United States meddles in our expansion plans.
Minister Kui has deployed a massive covert operation in the United States. Its goal is to create enormous political unrest, including assassinations and bombings.
Once the Europeans see what is happening in the United States, they won't interfere in China's activities. Wing said, China's Black Sea Fleet purchase will bring calls for the United States to intervene and condemnation from our neighbors. The Americans will move their fleet into the South China Sea, East China Sea, and Yellow Sea.
They will engage our fleet to pacify their allies. She said, Japan is building an offensive military. What you propose will push Japan to join the North American Union.
President Pan told Xi, the South China Sea Fleet is an expendable training tool for our military. It will provide an opportunity for our military complex to test systems and technologies in combat. Also, the fleet will provide protection for China's tankers transporting Middle East oil.
As for Japan, it isn't a serious threat.
Japan's economy is weak and its population is aging. Japan is too proud of her heritage to give up nationhood. Japan will never join the North America Union, even if it is in Japan's national interest to do so.
Manchu told President Pan, you underestimate the Americans. Have you forgotten World Wars I and II? The American president is talking about introducing legislation that will reinstate the draft, and this time for men and women. The United States is shifting production from consumption to war production. It nationalized companies in a number of industries.
China holds $3 trillion in United States debt. The Americans won't repay it if you carry out your plans.
They will use those funds to attack China. That will hurt China more than the United States.
President Pan said, World Wars I and II occurred during a different economic and political era, and with different countries.
The Americans don't have enough troops to invade China.
The United States economy can't support a war of the magnitude needed to suppress China's expansion.
Where will the Americans get the troops they need? Their population is shrinking. They all but stopped immigration. Europe won't participate, not even the British are interested.
Russia will be wiped out. Even if Canada and Australia participate as part of the new American Union, the number of troops will be small. That leaves Japan and the Southeast Asian nations.
They won't put up much of a fight. The Americans will never organize the Middle East into a meaningful force. It is a disarray of factions intent on killing each other.
Latin America is just as laughable.
The Americans will have to do all the fighting themselves. Even if the Americans attempt an invasion, we can quickly retrieve our armies and overwhelm them. The Americans will be outgunned and outmanned. But we have to weaken the American economy and its industrial base more than it already is, and we have to create massive civil unrest in the United States.
Wei asked, why annex North Korea? She asked, what's your plan for Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam, and North Korea? President Pan replied, we'll put a political commission in charge of each country's political elite, just like we did in Hong Kong. We need the North Korean army and its equipment to secure Russia's eastern territory.
General Wan is correct.
The Russians don't have the military resource to secure that area and neither do we.
North Korea has 10 million men and women in uniform ready to go to war with equipment.
We'll put our generals in charge of the North Korean army and take the North Koreans with us into the eastern fight. Manchu laughed.
The North Koreans won't fight for us, let alone die for us. She shook his head. I don't like it. Our military will be too widely dispersed. We'll have growing civil unrest, and we won't have enough security to suppress it.
President Pan said, the unrest will dissipate. We'll scoop up enough recruits for 8 more armies.
That will empty the re-education centers and prisons, and it will clean up the streets.
Those armies will fight on the front lines while our existing armies back them. We'll ramp up our manufacturing base to turn out weapons, tanks, airplanes, ships, and every sort of item needed for war. That will absorb substantial labor, boost the economy, and dramatically expand our technological base while providing good jobs. The proposed homestead law will draw entrepreneurs by the hundreds of thousands to fill the empty space in Russia's Far East Federal District.
There won't be time or reason for unrest. This strategy will wake the sleeping dragon that is China. We can't be defeated. Wei asked President Pan, "How complete is your planning?"
President Pan replied, "General Wan has detailed plans for the South and East China Sea, the Yellow Sea, North Korea, Russia's Far East Federal District, and Central Asia. Minister Kui has a detailed assassination plan to kill the American president, the Supreme Court justices and others. He is in the process of setting up the American Revolutionary Army and its political wing, the Free American Party. General Wan has the Ebola and cyber viruses ready to deploy. General Wan and Minister Kui are substantially increasing our human and electronic surveillance capabilities. China's cyber command will consist of 4 million cyber soldiers.
General Wan is ready to implement a security plan for the nation.
Minister Lin selected 100,000 entrepreneurs who are willing to flow into Russia's Far East Federal District behind our armies. General Wan intends to drop airborne troops to seize and hold Central Asia and Russia's Far East Federal District. He expects our armies to arrive before Russia can mount an effective response, but we need the political resolve to hold the territory once we take it." "Okay," Wei said.
"You have our go-ahead with your plans." President Pan glanced at the remaining members of the Politburo Standing Committee. They all nodded their approval.
Dishi walked past a waiting limousine and knocked on Manchu's house door.
Manchu's wife opened it.
"He's on the patio," she said.
Manchu's wife pointed to the hallway. Then she stepped out of the house and into the waiting limousine. Dishi made his way down the hall and out to the patio. "Hello, Dishi," Manchu said.
"You know Wei IP, Xiang, and Wing Tang?"
"I only know of you. You are all members of the Politburo Standing Committee."
Wei asked, "You headed the investigation into the American incursion into China to kill Poi Chu Dong and John Mishler, correct?"
"Yes, but I never proved that the Americans were here." Wei said, "Collect all the files and evidence that you have from your investigation and bring them to my office.
We would also like you to gather all the files that the Ministry of Security has on Minister Kui's involvement with Dr. Huri Ranshoff. Pull all the files on her involvement with Iran, her imprisonment there, and Minister Kui's involvement in helping Dr. Ranshoff escape her Iranian death sentence.
Bring those files to my office and refer anyone to my office who has questions. Minister Kui will know that I am investigating him. He'll destroy me." "Don't worry," Wing said. "You work for us."
She said, "We have another job for you too. Dr. Ranshoff played a role in the American attacks on Iran.
We want you to find out what it was.
Work with Minister Khorasani, the head of Iran's Ministry of Intelligence and National Security, and Anatoly Vodovsky, the chairman of the Russian Investigative Committee.
You will be our personal envoy." Wei told Dishi, "First, bring us the files. Then leave for Moscow and Tehran.
After you speak with Chairman Vodovsky and Minister Khorasani, we'll meet again." Minister Khorasani's secretary escorted Minister Kui into Minister Khorasani's office. As Minister Khorasani approached Minister Kui, Minister Khorasani said, "Minister Kui, what a pleasure." Minister Khorasani grasped Minister Kui's hand with both hands and shook it warmly.
Then he motioned for Minister Kui to sit at a small table not far from his desk.
Minister Khorasani told Minister Kui, "I was surprised to receive a hand-delivered letter. Iran's Ministry of Intelligence and National Security always looks forward to working with China's Ministry of Security." Minister Kui grinned and said, "I thought a hand-delivered letter sent by diplomatic pouch would be more personal and the easiest way to defeat the Americans' electronic surveillance." Minister Khorasani laughed and said, "I dream of shooting down their satellites. Does China have that capability?"
Minister Kui replied, "I leave those details to the military. Your letter was interesting, but vague." Minister Kui removed a bound document from his satchel and handed it to Minister Khorasani. Minister Khorasani flipped through the presentation.
When he finished, Minister Khorasani looked at Minister Kui and said in a frank tone, "China is declaring war." "No," Minister Kui replied. "China is giving people a political choice. China has the money and economic interest to bring badly needed change to the region. Iran has the operatives, networks, and political motivation to execute China's plan."
"I don't know if the Supreme Leader will be interested." Minister Kui grinned and said, "He'll be interested.
A chance to avoid US sanctions and strike the great Satan and Iran's enemies, without costing Iran a single rial, he'll be interested."
Anger flashed in Minister Khorasani's eyes. "Iran isn't a pawn to be manipulated."
Minister Kui ignored Minister Khorasani's outburst. He told him, "China would like Iran's assistance in changing governments in the specific countries identified in that document. China doesn't care what methods Iran uses to bring about regime change.
Now is the time to strike.
Their governments, royal families, and economies are weak.
It won't take much to crush them.
China doesn't care who Iran installs to lead the people. China only wants leaders who will favor China."
"Iran has demands."
Minister Kui raised an eyebrow.
"Demands," he said. Minister Kui was shocked. "Iran wants Dr. Ranshoff killed. What does she have to do with this? She was involved in the Americans' attack on Iran."
"Dr. Ranshoff isn't negotiable.
Move on to your other demands."
"Iran wants to build a joint space program with China, including launching commercial satellites and reusable space vehicles from launch sites within Iran."
"Iran's interest is strictly commercial. I will present your demands to President Pan."
"China expects Iran to move forward with China's plans for regime change. Iran has an opportunity to become a regional power, and to deliver a significant political and economic blow to her enemies."
"I am confident that Iran will not squander such an opportunity over petty, personal grudges."
Minister Khorasani grinned and said apologetically, "I mischaracterize Iran's earlier requests as demands."
"Good.
Iran and China have overlapping national and strategic interests.
President Pan will be pleased to hear that Iran agrees with China. I am sure that the relationship will be productive for both countries." Minister Khorasani walked Minister Kui to the door and told him, "I look forward to your return visit."
Minister Khorasani met with the Supreme Leader in his office shortly after Minister Khorasani's meeting with Minister Kui. He was excited and told the Supreme Leader, "China played right into our hands."
"How?" the Supreme Leader asked. Minister Khorasani handed the Supreme Leader the bound document which Minister Kui gave him.
He told him, "I recently met with Minister Kui. China is looking for regime change throughout the Middle East and in Central Asia.
You will get everything you want and more.
To carry out China's plan, China is willing to arm Iran. China is also willing to build military, oil export, and cyber infrastructure. China will buy all the oil that Iran can pump and transport it to China aboard China-flagged vessels."
The Supreme Leader said, "I'll review this and decide how to proceed."
Sometime later, the Supreme Leader called Iran's president, head of Iran's Revolutionary Guard and the commander-in-chief of Iran's army to his office. He told President Dust, General Yekta, and General Rad, "The United States is gobbling up the world like a beast from the underworld. Taiwan, New Zealand, and Australia's application for statehood were approved.
Now, Ireland, Wales, Scotland, and a number of smaller Asian nations have applied.
There is nothing to stop Bahrain, Qatar or others in the Middle East from joining. Soon Iran will have the United States on its doorstep."
General Yekta said, "Your Eminence, there is nothing that Iran can do to stop willing parties from joining together. Iran has a duty to stop the infidels."
"To that end, Iran has agreed to work with China to bring about regime change throughout Central Asia and in the Middle East. China will support Iran when Iran annexes Iraq, Syria, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, Yemen, Oman and the United Arab Emirates. President Dust, I want you to prepare legislation that changes Iran's currency from the rial to the yuan. US sanctions will not hurt the yuan and China will buy Iran's oil using yuan. General Ra, I want you to work with the new head of Iran's Revolutionary Guard. Prepare a plan to annex Iraq, Syria, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, Yemen, Oman and the United Arab Emirates. General Yekta, I want you to oversee Iran's space program. The United States' growing size and its electronic currency give it powerful weapons to strangle its opposition. When the electronic currency is coupled with the United States' electronic surveillance capabilities, it will be impossible to meaningfully oppose the United States and its allies in whatever they envision. Further, it will become impossible to incapacitate the United States' electronic surveillance and financial systems by taking out server farms or internet backbone sites. The only way to destroy the United States and its allies' stranglehold on the world is to destroy their satellites.
General Yechter said, "I don't have the credentials for that position." On the contrary, you are superbly qualified.
I want you to build a joint space program with the Chinese. The program's goal will be the commercial exploitation of space, but I want you to build a space vehicle capable of shooting down satellites. The Russian and Chinese satellites will stay. That will leave their military with communication, intelligence, and navigation capabilities. The United States and its allies will have to fight blind or choose to leave the rest of the world alone.
That's my plan.
Will the Chinese and Russians know about Iran's space vehicle's capability and its intended purpose?
No, and it's your job to ensure that the information remains an Iranian secret.
What about working with the Russians?
You can try, but space isn't their priority. That is not the case with China. China wants to challenge the United States in space.
China's arrogance will blind the Chinese to Iran's real intent. Iran can harness that belligerence for Iran's benefit. General Yechter asked, "When do I start?"
Immediately. The new head of Iran's Revolutionary Guard is already in place.